Virginia Department of Taxation versus R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, a successor in interest to Lorillard Tobacco Company. Mark R. Herring, Attorney General. Donald D. Anderson, Deputy Attorney General. Heather Hayes Lockerman, Senior Assistant Attorney General. Flora T. Heasel, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Appellants Counsel. Thomas W. Nesbitt, Mitchell A. Newmark, Eugene J. Gibalero, Appellees Counsel.
Hey, Ms. Hazel, did I pronounce that properly?
Heasel, Your Honor.
Hazel?
Heasel.
Heasel. All right. Well, you may begin.
May it please the court, my name is Flora Heasel, and I'm a Senior Assistant Attorney General with the Virginia Attorney General's Office, and I represent the appellant, the Virginia Department of Taxation, in this matter. With the court's permission, I would ask to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
This is an appeal from a decision of the Danville Circuit Court awarding Lorillard Tobacco Company, which is the predecessor to R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, a refund of corporate income taxes it paid to Virginia for the 2008 through 2012 tax years, on the grounds that Lorillard should not be required to include any of its leaf tobacco inventory housed in its Danville, Virginia facility in its Virginia property factor. And this decision is erroneous for two reasons, and the court and the department asked that you reverse it. First, Lorillard is using its leaf tobacco housed in the Virginia facility within the meaning of Virginia Code Section 58.1-409, the property factor statute, and it must include that leaf inventory in its property factor. And second, the department's regulation addressing the property factor is reasonable and plainly consistent with the property factor statute, and it requires that Lorillard include its leaf tobacco inventory in its property factor. As a multi-jurisdictional corporation, Lorillard is required to apportion its taxable income to the different jurisdictions in which it operates. And it does so by applying an apportionment formula. In Virginia, that formula is a fraction. The numerator of that fraction includes a property factor, a payroll factor, and 2 times a sales factor. And those factors are all added together to create the numerator. The denominator of that fraction is 4. Now, the property factor component of that formula is itself a fraction, the numerator of which consists of the average value of Lorillard's real and tangible personal property owned or rented and used in Virginia during the taxable year, and the denominator, which is the average value of all of Lorillard's real and tangible personal property owned and used throughout the taxable year everywhere. Property is only included in the property factor to the extent that it is used to produce Virginia taxable income, and it is effectively connected to a United States trader business, the income from which is includable in federal taxable income. Lorillard is a cigarette manufacturer that produces its taxable income by making cigarettes. It has a manufacturing facility in Greensboro, North Carolina, as well as a leaf accounting department in Danville, Virginia. Lorillard uses leaf tobacco that has undergone what is known as an aging process to make its cigarettes. Lorillard ages its own tobacco. It does not purchase tobacco in a state that can be immediately incorporated into a cigarette. Green, unaged tobacco is not suitable for cigarette production. The aging process produces certain chemical and physical changes in the tobacco leaf itself that significantly impacts the leaf's taste as well as its ability to be cut and blended and incorporated into a cigarette. It is not a fast process. In Lorillard's case, that process lasts anywhere from 13 to 23 months, depending upon the applicable aging policy and the grade of tobacco in question.
Counsel, let me ask you this question. Is it the fact that these leaves are undergoing this natural process that distinguishes this case from situation where a company is warehousing spare parts or whatever that it's then going to use in a manufacturing process in another state?
That is correct, Your Honor. While the leaf is housed in the warehouse, it is undergoing this process that is preparing it for the next stage of manufacturing. Lorillard does not produce cigarettes that have not gone through this particular process.
So in your view, a favorable ruling would not open the door to an argument that any kind of company that just stores parts in Virginia for use in manufacturing elsewhere, that now those warehousing operations could be taxed under this theory?
That is correct, Your Honor. To be included in the Virginia property factor, they have to be used to produce taxable income, and they have to be connected to the actual trade or business that is being conducted by the taxpayer.
Right. But I mean, it is a little counterintuitive, I'll admit, to say that something that is just sitting in a warehouse undergoing a natural process, we know it's not being used on an assembly line or whatever, that is being used. I understand your argument, but I'll just say, speaking strictly for myself, that seems a little counterintuitive compared to a plain language meaning of the word used.
And I think the distinction there with the meaning of use is that Lorillard has to affirmatively place this leaf tobacco in these warehouses. They are subject to ambient conditions, and it is stored at a moisture level of 12 to 14%. And that level remains constant throughout the process of aging.
Counsel, following up on Justice McCullough's question, and you used the word affirmatively place the leaf tobacco into the warehouse, the nuts and bolts manufacturer or user affirmatively places its nuts and bolts in a warehouse. I would assume that they place them in a position where they won't be exposed to conditions that might cause them to rust. So again, I'm having difficulty distinguishing the answer that you gave with regard to the nuts and bolts being ready to be called into service, not being subject to the tax, where this tobacco waiting to be called into service is. So help me further with the distinction.
Sure, Your Honor. And the distinction is that this particular process and these particular conditions that exist in the warehouse, the fact that it is exposed to ambient temperatures, that it is retained at a constant moisture level, that it sits there for this length of time, stacked in boxes, promotes the aging process. Lorillard introduced testimony from an expert that is one of its research scientists who testified that this particular process and the aging of tobacco in this particular manner has been studied several times, and that this is the best manner in which to get tobacco leaf to the point where it can be cut and blended into a cigarette.
And I don't question any of that. I've read that testimony. The tobacco is there going through a natural maturation process. I'm really struggling with how that equates to use, which in my mind would be some affirmative action on the part of Lorillard to employ this tobacco.
And so the affirmative action in the department's opinion is the monitoring of the tobacco as it sits there to ensure that the moisture level retains constant, that nothing happens to the tobacco as it sits there, and it is allowed to age and undergo these chemical and physical changes that are necessary for the tobacco to be incorporated into the cigarette. until it goes through this process, it doesn't have the necessary taste characteristics or the physical characteristics.
I missed the monitoring part. I thought the testimony was it's brought in boxes, it's placed in this warehouse, it's subject to ambient air. They don't do anything with it. It's just sitting there.
So there is ventilation in the bottom of the warehouses that can be adjusted to control humidity within the warehouses. And Lorillard's production schedule is dictated by the time that the tobacco goes into the warehouse. So when it is put into the warehouse, an imaginary clock, if you will, starts. And that clock continues until the requisite time period for the particular leaf, the grade, and the origin of tobacco in question is ready for it to be cut and blended into a cigarette.
I may interrupt you with a follow-up question. As you can tell from the questions from the court, this word has a pretty wide elastic range of meanings. And without using the term ambiguous, the general principle is where there's a taxing law and there is a fairly wide elasticity of meanings of the word, we strictly construe it in favor of the taxpayer on the ancient principle that if government wants to tax, government has that power, but it has to own it. It has to say it, has to be clear to everybody, and they have to take whatever political repercussions come or don't come with doing that. So why isn't the answer to your case that the very fact that we can hypothesize so many different meanings under so many different contexts means it is ambiguous and we strictly construe it and putting it in a warehouse and letting it sit there for months is not using, unless of course the General Assembly wants to say it is, which of course is their prerogative. Why isn't that the answer to your case?
And so the department takes the position that because this aging is part of Lorillard's overall manufacturing process, it cannot use the leaf tobacco in the warehouse until it has completed the aging process. And use in that context, I mean, cut and blend into cigarettes. It cannot get a final product until it has gone through this particular process.
Does the word use have a indisputably clear meaning? That is a meaning that if you line up 10 ordinary people, 8 of them, maybe 9, are gonna say, oh yeah, I know exactly what you mean by that. Or is it ambiguous, which is you line up 10 ordinary people and 4 or 5 people say, I don't think it means that. And another 4 or 5 says, I don't think it means that. Is it plain or is it ambiguous from the point of view of the Attorney General?
I think the term use is clear and unambiguous. And Your Honor, I would note that I have 2.5 minutes remaining that I would like to reserve for my rebuttal time.
All right. 2 minutes and 22 seconds, Ms. Hazel. All right, on the appellee's side of this case, there's a motion for admission pro hoc, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and may it please the court, my name is Thomas Nesbitt. I'm local counsel from here in Richmond for the appellee, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, a successor in interest to Lorillard Tobacco Company. I am pleased to introduce and would ask the court to hear oral argument from my colleague, Mitchell A. Newmark, who practices with Blank Rome LLP in New York, New York.
All right. Tell me the gentleman's name again.
Mitchell A. Newmark.
All right. Mr. Newmark, are you there? You're also
muted.
You need.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was trying to be so courteous and missed the unmute. Thank you very much.
Where do you practice?
My office is in New York, Your Honor.
All right. Well, I bet you welcome a trip here to Virginia every once in a while. And as I understand, Blank Rome has an office here as well in Virginia.
We do. Yes, we do, Your Honor. And as a matter of fact, I was before this court in the Coles decision, And I enjoyed the courtroom and everyone's company very much.
All right. Well, the motion is granted. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, may it please the court. My name is Mitchell A. Newmark for appellee R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, successor in interest to Lorillard Tobacco Company. And I'll refer to the company as Lorillard or Lorillard Tobacco Company because it was a separate company at the time. It was purchased after these years. So we're here arising from a bench trial on stipulated facts. The facts are undisputed. This court is looking at a pure question of statutory interpretation and, of course, reviews the case de novo. We think the circuit court got it right. The court does not defer to the commissioner's interpretation of a statute. And the regulation that the Commonwealth points to is simply not on point to the definition of use. Whatever standard, whichever lens this court wants to look at what the Commonwealth has done or what the Commonwealth requests here, with or without a regulation, the department simply cannot write a word out of a statute or change that word into another word. So the statute, as it's quite obvious from the questions we've heard already from the court, the statute requires that the property, in order to be included, be owned and used. Owned and used in the Commonwealth during the taxable year to the extent that such property is used to produce Virginia taxable income. The department would prefer that the word used not be there or that the word used be changed by this court simply to protect. It's undisputed that the statute does not define the word use, and it's also undisputed that the word use is in this statute is unambiguous. When we are given a statute term without a definition, we are to give it its ordinary meaning, and that's exactly what the circuit court did below after hearing extensive testimony. Everything that the Commonwealth has briefed and everything that you've heard today from the Commonwealth really goes to whether aging is important, and we don't have in the statute, we don't have own and be important, right? Or are indicia of ownership. Certainly when you buy something valuable, you don't leave it at the curb. You bring it in and you put it in a warehouse. You protect it. So what the Commonwealth is asking for is a statute that would say you have to own and own it, and that wouldn't make any sense either. The word use has to mean something. And why do we know, aside from the fact that it was written in the word use, own and use, that it has to mean something? Because the predecessor statute to this statute, and that is Virginia Code Section 58-151.042, did not have the word use, and it did not have the phrase to the extent that such property is used to produce Virginia taxable income. That came in 1981, and so we have to give use a definition that is different from the word own, because it said own before that, right? Now, what could use mean? We give it its ordinary meaning. The circuit court said employ. This court has already said in Flow Research Animals 1981 that nature simply taking its course is a nothing. And I think that case itself is instructive. But what was the legislature trying to do when it added the word use? And here's what it was trying to do. It was trying to prevent the dilution of the property fraction. And that's because the numerator of the fraction and the denominator of the fraction operate the same way, except the numerator is in Virginia property and the denominator is everywhere property. So when we talk about owned and used, if we didn't have the word use, somebody could just buy property outside of Virginia, right? Just buy property outside of Virginia and blow up the denominator of the factor. So for example, if we had, if I started Mitchell's catering business and somebody said, Mitchell, your food is so great, why don't you open a restaurant chain? And I open some restaurant chains and that takes off and I decide, I don't like the catering business anymore. That's not where I should spend my time. Now, I think, okay, maybe I'll sell the catering business in the near future. I go and buy a bunch of property in North Carolina, right? I'm then gonna maybe use that to expand my restaurant business. I put fences around it, so I protect it, right? And it turns out North Carolina has a 2.5% income tax rate instead of Virginia's 6% tax rate. North Carolina uses a single sales factor, fraction factor, so it doesn't ding you for having property in the state. So it's not going to cost me anything. And now, when I sell the catering business, I've diluted my fraction, and Virginia gets less. And that was a fear of the legislature. So again, we have to give the word used some meaning, because they didn't just write the whole paragraph owned and used. They had owned before, and then they went back in 1981 and added used. We certainly don't want to, they certainly didn't want to promote dilution of the fraction. I'll pause there if the court has questions about what I've said so far.
Any questions? You want to reserve 8 minutes and 19 seconds? Well, you wish you could. You wish you could, is that right?
Why not, right? There's a first time for everything, I suppose, Your Honor.
Yeah, well, this would be the first and the most unusual time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will continue. Yeah. So the department tries to cloak a definition of the word use in its regulation, but it's just as the court has kind of pointed out, it's not there. Based on the questions we've gotten from the court. We do think that if the court were to find that some of the definitions could be helpful or applied to Lorillard, certainly the definition of mineral rights as being used or not being used would be analogous to our case. I will say that cutting along the side of the regulation just doesn't do what the Commonwealth wants it to do. If we look at the mineral rights definition, it says mineral rights are used when placed in production. Now, we wouldn't place mineral rights in production. That's an intangible. The regulation itself actually doesn't make any sense. You would place minerals in production. But if the Attorney General wants analogies, to some of the examples in the regulation, and that's the way you want to go. Well, just like we have unrefined ore that is not steel yet, ready to make into, for example, automobiles, we don't have leaf that is aged to the point of being able to be used in the cigarettes during the taxable year. The testimony was that Lorillard never used the leaf in the year of purchase to make cigarettes. So we also, not only do we have, does the Commonwealth have a problem with its targeted definition of use that just involves this one case, but it doesn't, the department's view violates the principle that there's got to be use during the taxable year and there's got to be use to generate Virginia taxable income. And this company, it stipulated at paragraph 2, generates its income by manufacturing and selling cigarettes, not by having leaf sitting in boxes. And there's an important point about, goes to one of the earlier questions. The people in Danville that worked for Lorillard never saw the leaf. It got unloaded from the truck. This is a JA-606. Got unloaded from the truck, went into the it was in boxes, went into the warehouse in boxes, and then it came out of the warehouse when it was time to go to Greensboro North Carolina. And that testimony is quite clear. If you want to get into some details of the facts, I would recommend JA 599 to JA 600. The reason I will not get into those facts in excruciating detail here is because those facts are under seal and they were redacted. But suffice to say, the activity was limited to unloading the trucks, putting the boxes in the warehouse, and then taking the boxes out. Alternatively, if the court believes that somehow the regulation applies, that the company under the department's own view of what it is to use, and that is this available for use concept, the company should at least get a partial refund of the leaf that is sitting in Danville that could not be used to make Laurel Art Tobacco Company's cigarettes. And those facts too were undisputed at JA 600 as well. And I think there's an important point here. When we talk about what was done in Danville, we are talking about facts. And this court defers to the trier of fact for fact finding and how that process worked and what the judge heard and the why and whether it was available for use is something that this court should defer to the circuit court's decision. For our second alternative argument, will largely rest on our briefs, but what I want to point out to this court is that the U.S. Supreme Court has told us that a key to apportionment, this slicing of income, is that the apportionment must be fair. So we can have a statute that says how to slice the income, but the United States Constitution, the Due Process Clauses, and the Commerce Clause tell us that apportionment must be fair. And what does that mean? In Container Corp 1983, the US Supreme Court told us that the factors used must reflect a reasonable sense of how the income is generated. Now, as I mentioned, stipulation of paragraph 2, Laurel Art Tobacco Company generates its income by manufacturing and selling cigarettes, not by aging leaf. And so by putting aging leaf in the factor, that would not have the factors reflect a reasonable sense of how the income is generated. Also, in order to be fair, the apportionment formula must not be distortive, and we have covered that issue in our brief. I'll rest there. The department, or the Attorney General, points to a case from 1976, Lucky Stores. And that case is inapposite to the issue before the court, because in that case should have gone down. What they were asking for, they had a series of stores, and what they were asking for is separate accounting, kind of putting blinders on, trying to attribute particular expenses to particular stores. And the U.S. Supreme Court has said, we don't do it that way. We look at a unitary business as a whole, and we slice the income, for example, using property payroll and sales. We do it in a fair way, but we're not going to use separate accounting. That case is just not applicable. So we ask this court to affirm the correct decision of the circuit court and grant the refund as the court granted. Alternatively, if the department's regulation is viewed as defining use as applicable to Laurel Art, we ask that this court at least turn the regulation against the Commonwealth and give the company a partial refund as demonstrated in stipulation paragraph 10. But we do believe the circuit court was correct. And alternatively, if the court finds that Laurel Art used by having aging leaf, used the leaf under section 409, that would be an unconstitutional result as applied to Laurel Art's facts here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor. Thank you. Ms. Heasel, do you have rebuttal? You're gonna have to unmute your.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is not a scenario where nature is simply taking its course. This is done in a manner because the science underlying the aging process indicates that it must occur in this fashion. Applying artificial heat.
This is Justice Kelsey. What if it were a nursery and they had flowers waiting for the bloom to come out when the heat comes out? And they're not going to sell it until the blooms come out. Would that be using the flowers that are just sitting there waiting for the maturation process to work its magic?
Your Honor, I don't know that the department has had a scenario similar to that.
I'm talking about the logic of your legal argument. Would that apply to a nursery who's just putting out all the flower pots waiting for the flowers to bloom so they can take it to market?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that it would, because the flower is a final product. It simply has not bloomed. In this case, the leaf tobacco is a raw material that has started the production process. Its composition will change as it ages, its taste characteristics will change, and then once it reaches the final physical and chemical endpoints that are necessary to allow it to be cut and blended into a cigarette, then it will move to the next phase of manufacturing. And so that would be the distinction between the flower analogy and the aging leaf tobacco. This is also not a scenario that is analogous to the mineral rights. As Mr. Newmark indicated, mineral rights are intangible. There is no mineral in the taxpayer's hand to be able to be used. The right must be explored, the ore must be extracted before it can ever get to the next step of production. In this case—
One last question, what about coal that's mined elsewhere, shipped to Hampton Roads terminals, and it sits at the terminal in a coal terminal while it's emitting methane and being cooled down or placement in vessels? Would that be using the coal while it's waiting to be placed in a vessel?
If that process is required for the coal to be used in the next stage of production, then yes, it would be the department's position that it is being used under those conditions. Your Honor, I see my time is up. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.